Welcome to Best Picture This, where it is always Oscar season. I'm Mike.
And I'm Brian. In this show, we reevaluate every Best Picture nominee from the 21st century and decide whether to keep it or kick it from its Oscar pedestal.
We might need to get a ladder for this one, Brian, because today's pedestal...
or a balloon.
...is pretty... Yeah. I mean, a balloon would work because this pedestal is pretty tall. We'll be talking about a film from 2009 that is one of only three animated features ever of all time to be nominated for Best Picture. That movie is Up. That director is Peter Docter. The Beauty and the Beast.
And Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3. Mm. Yep. Here's the trailer.
Good afternoon. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
No.
I could help you cross the street.
No.
I could help you cross your yard.
No.
I could help you cross your...
No.
Ow.
All his life, Carl Fredrickson dreamed of adventure. Today, his adventure is finally taking off.
So long, boys!
Please let me in.
No.
All right. Russell! Come back up!
Where are we?
What is that thing?
Oh! It likes me.
Come, beat it.
Hey, look, a dog. Sheep. Uh-huh. Speak.
Hi there.
Did that dog just say hi there?
Oh, yes.
Bruh.
I have just met you, and I love you.
Can we keep him, please, please, please?
No.
But it's a talking dog! Whoa, what is that?
Get him!
Disney Pixar's Up.
Boop, beep, 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 boop, boop. With my Wilderness Explorer GPS, we'll never be lost. Oops.
Up. Not sure that trailer has any of the magic of the movie.
Sure it does.
It's a little long and stretched out, I think.
I thought it was great. I was enjoying that thoroughly.
I mean, when the dog talks, I'm going to laugh every time.
The dog talking is the worst part of the whole movie.
Oh, I hope you're kidding.
I'm not. Okay, apparently this will be an interesting episode here. This movie won the Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures Original Score, the Oscar. Michael Giacchino, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Giacchino. It also won Best Animated Feature, but, you know. Of course, if you're nominated for Best Picture, you're gonna win.
Yeah.
And then it was also nominated for Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay. Bob Peterson, Pete Docter, and Tom McCarthy was one of the other writers. Sound editing. So the score was released in 2009. It won the Academy Award. It won the Grammy. It won a Golden Globe. And it won the BAFTA for best score, best film music. It's the first time Pixar has won for the score, although Randy Newman won for song on Monsters, Inc. and Toy Story 3. and I noticed this as I was going with it and as I was watching it. But I don't know if you, did you feel like it was over the top that this happened or too much of a pattern? But so Ellie's theme, that whole... Da, 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 da. That it's played so many times throughout, but always with like different instrumentation. You know, it's very sad at times with like one piano, one note piano, and other times like a big swelling orchestra. What did you think about that? Did you like the music? You don't like the music?
I liked it. I wouldn't say that I love it because it does feel a little cutesy to me sometimes, but I do think it fits in this movie and it works well enough.
Too cutesy for an animated picture.
Make it darker. If it's not Coraline dark, I'm not
interested. But you also enjoyed the talking dog.
Well,
dog collar.
That is objectively hilarious.
98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
88 on Metacritic. Universally loved. A+ on CinemaScore. You can't really get any better than these reviews. I love this little tidbit from Richard Corliss from Time, who called the character of Carl a trash compacted version of Spencer Tracy. Thought that was pretty funny. The budget was $175. I mean, that's a ton of money, but it pays off. It made $735 million in the box office.
Wow.
$735. The original title was Heliums. In this Heliums. Show, we will talk trivia. We'll ask each other some questions. We'll talk trivia. And then we will decide once and for all the final verdict, if it will be kept or if it will be kicked.
I'm still getting over Heliums. Yeah. Why plural?
I don't know.
Questionable. Okay, so.
Do you prefer ups or up?
Singular. Keep it up.
So always with the singular with you.
Always. Never pluralize if possible. Arguably nothing in the movie matches the high of the first 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I like the whole first 30, mm-hmm. but the first 10 are especially special, I think.
They are.
So what were some of your other favorite moments or some standouts that happen throughout the rest of the movie?
Some of the comedic timing is just so good.
Like with the dogs.
Not with the dogs. Mm. So when Carl, you know, slams the door on Russell while they're floating up and then they're like, can I come in? No. They hold that just that extra couple of beats that it's funny. Also, when Carl is going down the stairs in super, super slow-mo on his motorized little, you know, chair, and he's going down the stairs, it's so predictable that he's going to get stuck.
Yeah.
So predictable. And he does, and then he bangs it, and I still laugh. So somehow, you know, it all works. The other thing that I really loved about the movie, besides those first 10 minutes, was just like three or four times when I'm like, wait a second. So he's got a hose strapped to his shoulders and he's pulling a house aloft by balloons with a crazy big huge bird and a talking dog and a wilderness survival guy, this little kid.
Yep.
Like just the inventiveness of it. You know, I'm just watching it like, this is so cool. Like how wild the situations are in this movie. And, you know, a lot of times that just doesn't happen in a movie where, you know, it's that, fresh. And so I thought that, you know, two thumbs up for that.
Yeah. For me, maybe the main criterion for animated movies is they need to make use of this form. And a lot of them just seem to do that by saying, well, let's just have animals talk.
Yeah.
But this, they're talking, but they're playing with that idea. It's not like, I don't know, Zootopia or something like that, where it's like the animals talk like regular people, except they're animals. And so it's funny. Here, it's like a house floating by balloons. This is something that you can't do in an actual movie. And if you did it with computer graphics, it would probably look pretty corny and stupid. But you're looking at an animated film, so you're already suspending so much disbelief that you can get lost in that fantasy.
Yeah, agreed. Pete Docter and Jonas Rivera noted the character Carl's charming side in spite of his grumpiness. And they said that it comes from this idea, their theory, and it's not my idea, but the elderly have this charm, this old man license is what they called it, to get away with saying things that nobody else could say.
Yeah.
So for example, they went out to eat with Joe Grant, who was one of the, you know, one of the original Disney animators. And they're, you know, they like, I think they even paid tribute to him and these other animators in the movie. dedicated it to them. They went out to eat with one of these guys who's a really old guy, and he would call the waitresses honey. Mm-hmm. And one of the guy, either Pete Docter or Jonas Rivera said, "I wish I could call a waitress honey, but you can't because you're too young. You know, an old guy can do it, young guy can't do it." And so I think that, you know, what's your take on, did they do an old guy because they'd already used up the fish, they'd already used up, you know,
toys,
all the,
what else can we do?
Used up a rat, you know, a chef rat, obviously.
So I guess we're down to old people.
An
now.
Old guy. they did like have this total brainstorm, you know, at one point early on in Pixar, like, and they ended up using them all to a car, you know, racing cars.
Yeah. I think it is original for a kid's movie to focus on an elderly person.
Yeah.
I think that's smart and original. Mm-hmm. But also you can have this lovable grouch thing, which, you know, is this type of personality that I've been trying to cultivate myself.
Yeah. I mean, you're it's going to work for you. You know, when you get to be 65, 70, you're going to be Carl.
I have to just grow into the grouchiness.
Although Carl, you know, the animation style is so like caricatured.
Yeah.
That his head is only one third of his body. And although I don't know about that square jaw, I think that's pretty realistic. I mean, I think my jaw is quite square like that.
For sure.
You know,
lantern.
Sort of Superman-like, the squareness of the jaw. Salon editor Stephanie Zakarik.
Oh, I have a huge chunk of her review in my my notes.
Well, this isn't a full quote. I'll just say, she described the marriage between Carl and Ellie as resembling a dental adhesive commercial. Mm-hmm. More than a real relationship. You agree with that?
So I was going to read a big chunk.
You can skip ahead to your notes on her. I would like to hear more about this.
I was going to read a big chunk of her review because it's negative and because it's
that's all we ever read, isn't it? It's mostly negative reviews.
No, I don't think so. But for a movie like this, it's kind of rare to find a negative review.
Everyone loves
that.
I mean, it's 98% and it's an A+.
So going into this, I knew the reputation this movie has. So I'm like, let me check out Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm just scrolling through and they're all red, fresh, you know. So I find a rotten one, interesting blurb. And I go and it's an interesting review. Yeah. But something like that, she talks about their whole relationship is just a series of them beaming at each other and having picnics. And, you know, that's supposed to be our concept of like what love is. And her complaint is that that's not very complicated and it's not very adult. So it's kind of easy to put up this ideal and say, oh, we don't have this anymore, so we're sad. But I think where she kind of, I don't think that she's putting quite enough weight in the chunk of that opening montage where we see that they can't have kids.
Yeah.
It's like everything is happy. They're growing up together. They're like so excited to have a life and to start a family and have adventures. And that's kind of their first big one right after marriage. Mm-hmm. And it's a failure and they can't do it. So,
and they keep smashing the jar.
Yes.
And they every time they're disappointed in reaching their goal.
This is, we're saving up to go to Paradise Falls and nope, we have to fix this stupid roof or have to buy a new car or whatever.
I think Stephanie Zakarik was wanting to watch Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf instead of Up, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. But I think you can get, since that's sort of their risk taking, first of all, you don't see stuff like you can't have a baby in animated films, especially at this point. This kind of opened the door to some, you know, darker stuff in Pixar, I think.
Yeah.
But once you've introduced that darkness, you can get away with shorthand that's a little bit lighter because you're already seeing both sides of the coin.
It is shorthand, but I mean, we've all cried at dental commercials also, right? I mean, some of those are very good quality.
They don't show like any fights or anything like that. You know, they have this long marriage. Would it have been interesting to see them have one fight and then get over it? You don't have to see them have some long drawn out argument, but you know, show them like, you know, one leaves the door and slams it and then they hug afterwards. Sure. But I don't care.
I already got
that sense of complication from the relationship.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that the one credence I'll put in that criticism is the end of the movie is a little bit overly, you know, a little too neatly tied up to the point where not only does the house land where it's supposed to be, which I don't know. I don't really know why they had to put that in as a touch. I think if it were on its side, it would be a much improved ending, honestly.
Hmm.
But if not only does Carl suddenly not need his cane in the final fight with Christopher Plummer slash Carl or Muntz, whatever his first name is.
Yeah.
He suddenly doesn't need his cane. And I'm like, why do we need that? And then Russell, who can only, you know, go up like 1 inch on the rope to climb, which is a funny moment.
Yeah.
You know, but later on in the movie, he suddenly can climb all the way up this rope. And it's like, these are like just physical feats that are not anything to do with like what you learned during the movie or during your journey. They just are like suddenly magically you're stronger and can walk better. And yeah. And I think that
when you're determined,
I guess
you could do these things,
but I just feel like they, some of that stuff wasn't really earned, you know, from the story. And then you have to remember, but it's all a moot point because this is a fictional world.
Okay, like up the, in the air. You're bringing it back
like
to that.
The IMDb point of if you don't get that joke, I apologize. We don't do inside jokes here at BPT, but you can go back and listen to that episode.
But she has this one part of the quote, and I do think that her review is interesting. Especially this part. She says, everyone at Pixar, from its writers and directors to its expert army of animators, knows exactly what he or she is doing. And in Up, that shows too much. So her whole point is kind of that you can see
too perfectly made.
Yeah, you can see the strings almost behind, mm-hmm. and she resents that, you know, manipulation.
It's funny that you say this because I've been watching Brothers, mm-hmm. which is quite a bit different from this movie.
A little bit, yep.
I'd never seen it before. I'm watching it in like 4 installments. I'm really not even qualified to talk about it. But the criticism that I have, I really enjoy it. I think that it's getting better and better as the movie goes on. It's Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, Natalie Portman, Sam Shepard. And but like I feel like every moment in the movie is so perfectly crafted that it feels more like it's written than it's happening organically. And yeah. maybe that's sort of like what she's saying. Like they're so good at storytelling that every little scene, it feels like it's from a note card that you had to follow all these rules.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have a certain conflict and has to advance a story 2%.
Yeah.
Or the note card has to be thrown out and the team of writers has to come in and make a new one. And like the episode is just like kind of almost too perfect that it's not really organic anymore.
And I totally get that.
Yep.
And part of me thinks maybe it's a mood thing because I do have this feeling a lot with animated movies mm-hmm. where I feel like either it's too simple or it's not serious enough. But I don't know. Especially as I've gotten older, I've kind of just accepted that animated movies are a different thing. They're a different beast. I almost judge them on a different scale because they are appealing to children. That's part of the job of a cartoon. Mm-hmm. So even though an adult can enjoy it, and the best ones are art, they're higher than just kids' movies.
So part of the idea of an animated movie is to appeal to children.
Some animated movies.
Like Coraline, for example.
First of all, yes. Coraline movie. Coraline does appeal to kids, and we'll get into that in
all
the
right,
next episode.
Next episode, fine. We'll wait on that. I have a good Roger Ebert quote to read in that episode. okay, so what are the questions we got here?
Those are my two. I was going to bring up the quote, and you stole my thunder.
Oh, dang, sorry about that. Yeah. Okay, so
outrageous.
Here's an idea that Pete Docter had, and I have a few pretty cool trivia points about how it was made. The movie was made. Pete Docter, the director, added and then removed a magic fountain of youth egg that was laid by the bird so that he would explain the age discrepancy between Muntz and Carl. So if you notice, Carl goes from a little kid and Muntz is in the newsreel at the beginning. And then Carl is really old and Muntz is like still alive.
I mean,
he does look old in there. Sorry.
They have that.
This is kind of an ageist show. I'm sorry.
I guess they have that old man fight, which I love.
Yeah.
Where they're hitting each other with
totally
the canes
Star
and
Wars.
They throw their bags out.
There's actually a bunch of Star Wars references. It seems like the red leader, you know, the dogs going on the biplanes and everything. But like, But yeah, my question is, did you have a problem with months not aging nearly as much as Carl? Should they have put in a magic fountain of youth egg so that it showed that months was months was not dead yet?
Did not think about it one time.
Terrible.
It didn't even cross my mind.
You need to put your critic's glasses on when you watch these movies more.
I judge these on a different scale, Brian. As we've already established, I give these movies free reign.
Okay, so a few pretty fun trivia points. Let's see. Bob Peterson is the voice of Doug, who is pronounced, by the way, D-U-G.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great name for a dog. He's a talking golden retriever. Peterson knew he would voice Doug when he wrote his line, "I have just met you and I love you," which was based on what a child told him when he was a camp counselor in the 1980s.
That's amazing.
Let's see. I watched this streaming. I don't know if you watch it streaming, but one thing that I didn't get was the short, Doug's Special Mission, which is on the DVD.
DVD I did not read. See that. No.
I'm sure you can find it somewhere, but I didn't get that. Doug was actually also in Ratatouille. He was a shadow on a wall that barks at Remy.
If he didn't talk, though, who cares?
I don't know. Apparently, that's what they did, though, so that counts. Did you notice where John Ratzenberger shows up in this one?
No.
You know who I'm talking about?
No.
Welcome to the Himalayas. He's that voice who's in every Pixar movie. He was Mac in Cars. No?
Nope.
Dude, have you not watched all these Pixar movies?
I've seen Cars once and thought it was fine.
Oh, man. Well, John Ratzenberger is Tom. He's one of the foremen, the construction foreman at the beginning.
Okay.
He's in every single Pixar movie until I think the recent ones. Maybe, I don't know what his fate is. But the initial storyline was a floating city on an alien planet populated by Muppet-like creatures. I mean, you can see how this, you know, this easily morphed into Up, with two brothers vying to inherit their father's kingdom.
Well, I do like the Muppet angle.
And when the brothers fall to Earth, they encountered a tall bird who helped them understand each other. It just kind of shows like how the many phases of these storytelling. So the kid who played Russell was actually the younger brother of another kid who was going into audition, and the kid, you know, he's being the annoying little brother, just jabbering nonstop, like while they're trying to get his older brother to do the audition, and they just said, "That guy's perfect, let's take him," the younger kid. So it pays to be an annoying little brother sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
So Pete Docter said that this was a coming of age story and an unfinished love story. Here's some of the inspiration. Casablanca. Unfinished love story, I guess.
How is it unfinished?
Because
they never made it to the falls?
I guess.
But the whole, I don't know.
Because at the end, he doesn't get Ellie back because she died.
Was it ever the goal to get Ellie back?
A resurrection story about men who lose something and then regain purpose. I guess that's more what it is.
Yeah.
Did you notice this? This is some of the detail of these perfectionists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Carl's head is a square, just like the house, and Russell's head is a circle, like the balloons. Apparently that was the deal. To animate old people, Pixar animators studied their own grandparents and footage of the Senior Olympics. We should put some clips of that and see if they got that right.
Okay.
But among the realistic ways they did this, they had a rule for Carl that he could never turn his head more than 15 or 20 degrees without also turning his torso. So he looks pretty stiff. Until, of course, at the end, he becomes an action hero and he becomes all flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the movies of 2009, this was one of 10 nominated for Best Picture. And is it going to make your top 5 list? Is it going to make your top 10 list?
I'll say yes for 10. I've really got to start thinking more constructively about this five, because I just keep dodging
you
the question
all week
over
to
and
prepare
over again.
For this question. You knew I was going to ask you.
I know.
But I have a very similar answer.
I know. It's going to be another one of those borderlines.
It's kind of a borderline for me. I really like it. If it doesn't make my top five, it's not because I didn't think it was good enough. It was really good, but just personal, you know, whether you loved the movie or not, I guess. But it's definitely, I remember loving the first 10 minutes, first time I saw it, and then kind of losing interest throughout as the bird didn't really love the bird, didn't love the talking dogs.
Not a huge fan of the bird. The
Russell's fine.
Great.
The high-pitched, you know, squeak of Alpha is kind of like a little predictable and kind of, it's been done a little bit. You know, the Doberman Pinscher, who's like talking like a helium balloon, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. That doesn't help me a whole lot in the movie, but, this time around watching it, I didn't really have as many of those problems and I was thoroughly enjoying it throughout.
Squirrel.
Yeah, that also.
I mean, that doesn't.
Don't love that either.
Oh, man.
It's kind of like, okay, this has been done, the squirrel thing.
Well, I think it's been done because of.
Because of that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, that's 100 comedy points for squirrel every time.
Every time?
Every
You're
time.
You're busting up laughing. They said squirrel again. Yeah, oh,
exactly.
Keep it coming.
My knee was sore from all the slapping, Brian.
So in the next episode, we're going to talk about Coraline, the beautiful, dark, twisted fantasy of Neil Gaiman, starring the voice talents of Dakota Fanning and Terry Hatcher.
Ah, yes. We're going dark. Until then, find us wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on social media. And for 16 years of golden takes, head over to letterboxd.com/Mike Cavallari.
To support the show, visit patreon.com/bestpicturethis.
Thanks to WNZF and the illustrious Mark Gilliland for producing. Also, please remember to rate, review, subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Best Picture This, where the two hosts are nowhere near old enough to call the waitress honey.